21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Look up your chimney, the sky ain't blue, it's kinda yellow, you know it's true.
Just listen to that. That's the Traveling Wilburys. You hear Bob Dylan over there? That's him. And George Harrison? That's right. ELO is represented in there. What a singing group. I think they were the greatest. It's too bad they don't sing together anymore. This is 21st Century Radio. I'm what's left of the alleged Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD hanging out in this part of the universe. And, of course, it's such a big place, I hardly know where it is most of the time. Our executive producer and research assistant, who is my boss and likes to push me around an awful lot, and she gets away with it all the time, because she's bigger than I am, and Noah Dankner. Noah Dankner, who holds the world's record of bench pressing 622 pounds. Now, that's a lot of weight, it's true. But, you know, Noah Dankner is less than 115 pounds. How does he do it? Well, he must have a couple of UFOs helping him along the way. And, of course, we are going to be joined today tonight by two people this hour. Jennifer Stein, she's the executive producer and director of Travis, a 90-minute documentary film recounting the famous 1975 UFO abduction of Travis Walton, and we'll be joined by Travis in just a little while, too. Now, let me give you an introduction to Travis. Sit up straight out there. No talking. That's right. Feet flat on the floor, eyes straight ahead. And you can chew gum. We allow you to chew gum every now and then. Now, Travis Walton was born February the 10th, 1953. He was an American logger who was allegedly, they said by Wikipedia, abducted by a UFO on November 5th, 1975, while working with a logging crew in the Apache Sitgraves National Forest in Arizona. Walton could not be found, but he reappeared after a five-day search. The Walton case has received mainstream publicity and remains one of the best-known instances of alleged alien abduction. UFO historian Jerome Clark, an old friend of ours, remember he did the UFO volumes 1 and 2? He gave us a half a dozen of them. We passed them out to the rest of the planet, and boy, do they love them. And he writes that, quote, "Few abduction reports have generated as much controversy as the Walton case. It is furthermore one of the very few alleged alien abduction cases with some corroborative eyewitnesses, like six others, and one of the few alleged abduction cases where the time allegedly spent in custody of the aliens plays a rather minor role in the overall account." UFO researchers Jenny Randles, and there's a fellow here by Peter Halge, or Hugh, well, it's going to be one or the other, write that, quote,
"Neither before or since has an abduction story begun in the manner related by Walton and his co-workers."
That's the voice of authority. It didn't sound like it, did it? Well, furthermore, the Walton case is singular in that the victim vanished for days on end with police squads out searching. It is an atypical close encounter of the fourth kind, CE4, which bucks the trend so much that it worried some investigators, others, and others to defend it. Now, I don't know if Travis has gotten back to us yet. Are you with us? Yes? Yes, he is? Indeed. Travis?
Hello?
Hello, Travis. How are you tonight?
I'm fine.
That's a good thing, too. Do you know you joined us on 21st Century Radio back in 1993 when my wife interviewed you and you did a great job. Remember that?
Yeah,
you do.
That just stands out.
Well, she is a really good interviewer. And you did a great interview there, and we have some cuts here that we might play during this hour of that. But the last time you joined us was March 8th, 1993. Your experience is now referred to as one of the most significant UFO events in history. Why do you believe that it is?
Well, I mean, there's a whole lot of factors. You know, I think that having six witnesses was very important. You know, and even at the time, Dr. Harder made the point that if you had six witnesses who said that they saw someone commit a murder, that would be considered an open and shut case.
Yeah.
But somehow, that when it's a UFO involved, even when the six witnesses pass lie detector tests, people are still nitpicking expressing doubt. And that it's really strange. Either we're setting the bar too low for the death penalty, or we're setting it artificially high for UFO cases.
Oh, I'm certain it's been set way too artificially high. Carl Sagan's made sure of that. Now, would you share with us, we haven't mentioned the names of your logger crew who experienced seeing you blasted by light, and they thought you were dead at that time, and how this event changed both your life and your crew's lives forever, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, Mike Rogers was the boss, and, you know, he was the focus of a lot of the accusations just because he was the crew boss. But some of the attempts to discredit the case also focused on the youngest member of the crew, who was Steve Pierce. He was only 17 at the time. He actually, you know, lied to Mike and told him he was older than that in order to get the job. But the second oldest was Ken Peterson, and then there was Dwayne Smith, Alan Dallas, and John Gallette, rounding out the seven men.
Well, it's very unusual to have six witnesses, and then yourself, of course, continuing to exist after something like this. And, you know, the film that was done, Travis, the film that was done was, in my opinion, really extraordinary. And we've been talking to Jennifer Stein about it last hour, and she's still with us at this time right now listening in. One of the things that I found amazing, and I really enjoyed your comments on this, when you guys really looked into the individual Phil Klass. Remember Phil Klass?
Oh, yeah. He is best known and relevant to this case with coming up with a $10,000 bribe offered to Steve to try to discredit it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it sure makes you wonder that why anyone, if they sincerely believed it wasn't real, would feel that a bribe was the way to discredit the case.
Well, we always heard about these bribes, but we never knew where he was getting his money.
Obviously, you know, with his nature of his work, he couldn't have had that much extra money laying around. And so getting a hold of, through the Freedom of Information Act, the FBI investigation file on Philip Klass, a document in there was a memo from J. Edgar Hoover himself to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. And, you know, these documents are available to anyone through the Freedom of Information Act, basically turning the case over to the CIA. Mm-hmm. And this is a standard, recruiting tactic for the CIA, you know, to get some prosecutable offense that they can use to, you know, leverage cooperation from people. And, you know, of course, the money I would expect would come from whatever agency wound up, being his handler.
Well, again, as I mentioned to Jennifer, this is a truly remarkable expose that you guys did in this film. Every UFO researcher that was serious about this work has had to put up with his, I'll call it insanity. There's something wrong with this man. I've never met, and of course I've met him, never met a meaner spirited person in my life.
That's truly nasty.
Yes, and the fact is that that everybody in the media, especially the national media, they'd always have him on. They'd always have him on, and he'd always say the same kind of things. And sometimes they would almost catch him. Like one of the things he loved to do was near the end of any interview, if he's debating somebody, he would make a statement like, "Hey, well, you know, I got that information, and I'd love to share it with you. It's in the glove compartment of my car, and if you let me go out there and go get it, I could read it over the air." And of course, they say, "No, we haven't got time for that." And of course, at the end of the program, it was overheard that really he didn't have anything like that in his glove department. It was a total bluff. He'd get away with all kinds of things like that.
And actually altering quotations. I mean, I would challenge any of his surviving fellow skeptics to justify altering a sentence to reverse the meaning in order to make it look like somebody said something that actually the total opposite of what was actually said.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he did that often. And I'm so glad that people documented this because, you know, he was fair-haired with the government. He was fair-haired. And yet, in that report that you mentioned, I don't know if it was J. Edgar Hoover that said, you know, this guy's... they had checked into his credibility, and they didn't think he was too credible.
Yeah, they said the Bureau should be most circumspect in any future dealings with him. And they actually said, let's see, what was it? Didn't seem to be in full possession of his faculties.
I mean, that's an awful lot to say, Travis. Jeez, a whiz.
And, well, these government agencies have what they call useful idiots, you know. Yeah, they don't have to respect people to make use of them.
Yeah, well, he really caused lots of difficulties for more than half the planet. Now, how did it affect your relationship with the rest of the crew, your family and friends and neighbors about this, especially after you were gone for 5 days?
Well, you know, the crew was, for the most part, people I didn't hang around with much, you know. Generally speaking, everybody, you know, had their own lives away from the job, and we were really just together as a work crew. So, you know, the job went away as a result of the incident, so, you know, we didn't really have that much reason to, you know, continue to associate. Plus, you know, in search of work, they went to various other places, other states. So it kind of broke us up and split us up in a way, but we've still, you know, in more recent years, tried to reconnect because we shared an experience that was so profound that, you know, it'll always link us in terms of, you know, a really profoundly life-altering experience.
Yeah, well, it's... Now, the other wonderful experience I had in watching this the couple of times the other night was the lie detector tests.
Well, you know, at the time, the president of the American Polygraph Association said that the odds were over a million to one of there being any kind of mistake when you have that many people passing tests on the same issue. And that was when 6 tests were passed, but now there's been 16 passed tests in connection with this incident. I've passed 5 different tests from 3 different examiners who were, you know, at the top of their game. As far as polygraphy is concerned, those who do work for law enforcement are considered, you know, the better qualified.
And again, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll say what I was going to say. Within the film itself, you can begin to experience some of the things. Watching the film as it evolved made me feel more or less like I, for the first time, truly understood what the heck was really going on within this particular piece. Because I got confused back when they're in the 1978. I have your 1978 book here. I never got your 1995 one. And I wanted to ask you one question, but I'll have to ask you that question after we come back from our break. And now I'll give you the question, and you can treat, you can actually cheat. You can look into your notes and find out the answer to this question. Is that okay?
Okay, I'll talk to you after the break.
All right, after the break, we'll talk about that. We'll be back with our guest, Travis Walton, and, of course, Jennifer Stein is with us here on 21st Century Radio talking about the Travis Walton. As a matter of fact, if you want to see a bit of that, a little piece of it, go to the web of TravisWaltonTheMovie.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Betty.
And Bob Luca, and you're listening to
21st Century Radio, the Bob Hieronymus Show.
Lovely people. We had such a good time with Betty and Bob Luca. And when we put... I just love her energy. Okay, welcome back to 21st Century Radio. We're talking about a movie you gotta see. It's called Travis. It's a 90-minute documentary film recounting the famous 1975 UFO abduction of Travis Walton. And it is important for many, many reasons. I've already mentioned why I think it's super important in that what it reveals about Don Menzel and Phil Klass, but also about the media. And Jennifer Stein is still with us, and I'm going to ask her a question I should have asked her before, and then we'll get back to Travis. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, all right. Are you sitting up straight?
I think I am.
Okay, and your feet are flat, on the floor, your eyes are straight ahead, and you're not talking to anybody else, right?
Correct.
All right, that's the way to go. But you can chew gum. We still allow it. Now, how complicit is the media in deliberately debunking or lying to all of us, destroying the reputations of lives of those who just wanted to know the truth? I'm biased in this particular area, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you.
Well, media that's paid by large conglomerates these days are really not willing to share the real stories or the true stories. Every once in a while I catch a news clip about a sighting that's happened, and there's usually a joke made somewhere around the news table debunking the seriousness of the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can say for myself, if I refer to myself as media, I'm independent media. I pay for and, you know, underwrite the productions that I do, and I'm very serious about it. I think you're only going to find independent filmmakers like James Fox and a few other people that are really willing to tackle this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say there is a new television show produced in California called Hangar One, and they're covering MUFON files and investigations. There's a couple of other serious programs now out, Ancient Aliens and things like that. They're trying to do a decent job covering this topic. But generally, news media and even press print don't take the topic seriously. And I don't think they're allowed by the owners of the papers and the networks. And I think that that's why they don't address it. I think they're given direct orders not to.
I think you're absolutely right. You have just won a free trip to Bermuda and about $15,000. How do you like that? I think that's exactly right. Because we do the same thing you do. We pay for this show. We don't have any advertisers. We have learned that advertisers will try to affect your programming sooner or later. And we obviously were into this for the experience of educating and especially getting other people to read books. And that's the reason why I put so much emphasis on books. So let me ask Travis. Travis?
Yes.
Did you hear my question about the media? Would you like me to read it again?
Yeah. And, you know, it's they don't have to actively reinstitute this prohibition. You know, once they've got it going so where it goes without saying that this is not a worthy or serious topic, then, you know, they don't have to say it anymore.
and it's a credibility issue. And I think, you know, the debunkers and those, especially the debunkers that are sponsored by the government, have helped to foster this attitude amongst the media by, you know, mockery and also creating the false impression that UFO investigators just believe everything. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case at all. You know, all of the investigators that were interviewed for the Travis film are people who have looked objectively at huge numbers of cases and will say, this is not a legitimate case. And this one is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a false impression that they just, you know, are uncritical when they actually do have some very strict investigative protocol to separate the good cases from those that are, you know, explainable in other terms.
Yes. And of course, has the media let up on you yet?
Well, I think things have actually improved. It's remarkable. You know, there was a television interview here recently that was quite favorable, and the local paper did a front page article that was very favorable. So there's been a sea change, and it's because the kind of evidence that is presented in this film is filtering out, and it's finally getting through to people near and far, you know. And it's something that's taken on a life of its own. I'm getting emails and contact from around the world in some very obscure places that you never would have thought, you know, Tanzania and Moldova and, you know, so some pretty exotic places.
You know who would have really loved to have been alive and read your book and seen your film? You ever heard of a guy by the name of Jimi Hendrix?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of him?
Well, I don't know. He was a rock and roll guy. It was really big in those years.
Did you enjoy his work?
Well, I don't know that I did. You know, it was not really my kind of music, but, you know, it was certainly popular with my age group.
Did you know he had UFO sightings?
Well, you know, it's not just him. It's a lot of musicians.
Yeah, yeah.
Developed the theory about this, that there's something called an alien muse. Mm-hmm. In other words, a lot of creative people, not just in music, but in acting and even in scientific areas, have had their experiences that inspire them to, to a higher level of, I think it's their own product, but it's inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that also, of course, John Lennon had an experience there in New York City yet, sitting out on his little balcony at the hotel with his girlfriend at that time. It certainly wasn't his particular wife at that time. And sitting out there naked and seeing a UFO come in about 300 or 400 feet above their hotel. That's quite an experience that doesn't change. But I found out that there are many individuals. I know who would love to see one. For most of all, Ziggy Marley and the Marley family. Because I know that, again, you have a very close tie. A lot of rock and rollers just are deeply involved in this. Paul McCartney, etc. Well, anyway,
well, Muhammad Ali came here.
That's right.
To train for the next fight immediately after my experience here.
Well, I'll be. What a synchronistic experience that must have been.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to him?
Well, I didn't. But I understand that he actually stayed in the place where I just had my 40th anniversary conference.
Isn't that something?
Commemorating this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, heading to talk to you a little earlier about is I've read your 1978 book. I never did see, I think my wife got the your 1995 book, so I never got a chance to see Fire
well,
in the Sky.
That was 96, I think, but you know, there's actually a 2010 edition, too. But,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's twice the size of the original.
Well, so you must have new information in there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll be. Yeah, I've always loved the photographs of the paintings. You want to mention anything about the artist who did some of the paintings?
It was Mike Rogers.
Mike Rogers.
So, it started with him trying to, combine the crew's descriptions of the craft itself. And when, I could see what he could do, I said, well, hey, how about, trying to represent the creatures I saw? And that was a laborious process. I'm sure he was losing patience with me, because I made him do it over like 20 times. No, that's not quite it. But, he was inspired to paint better than he ever had in his life.
Well, I wonder if he was what used to be called by Paul McCartney, overshadowed in this experience. You would accept this theory or necessarily Jennifer, but I don't think this was an accident that it happened to you. I know that you, at first, your views of that abduction have changed a bit since over the last 40 years. You want to talk a little bit about that, because there is so much fear about these things, and yet you said some amazing things in this film, Travis. You sounded more like you were becoming a philosopher.
Yeah, it definitely inspired me to try to think, try to make some sense of it. And it was a long, slow process. At first, the horror of it, the impact of the experience itself, and then the terrible way I was treated in the media and the public reaction was very, very hard to cope with. So, I had to dig deep. I had to do a lot of thinking. At the time the incident happened, it was just so totally terrifying that I, lost control of my, courage, my fear. It just overcame me in a way that, it's just hard to explain. And I've tried to, lay out the factors that made me lose control so completely.
Mm-hmm.
To regain consciousness and feel immediately the pain. Something desperately, desperately wrong inside. That's the beginning feeling. And then the feeling that I can't get enough air, that I'm struggling to breathe, and it's just, it's a suffocating feeling, and suffocation is something that will generate panic.
We're losing you a little bit.
To suddenly see these creatures so close and realize, where I was.
You want to describe those? Oh, wait. Let's describe. No, we got a few minutes before we take a break. Would you describe these creatures?
Well, they were hairless, very small, but had huge heads with huge eyes. And those eyes were the thing that really bored into me, literally. And I've come to think that perhaps, that they're psychic, for want of a word, ability to control people comes from the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was driven home to me here recently. I had a medical doctor at one of my conferences that came up to me and said, it is a fact that the eye is actually an extension of the brain behind it. There's an opening through the skull. If you were going to try to project some sort of energy from the brain, it would make sense that it could come through these eye stalks towards the front of the head. And I'm thinking that was what was so painful for me, because they were trying to control me and it wasn't working because of the injury that I had sustained in being struck by that blast of energy.
Mm-hmm. But your feelings about that experience now are that maybe it wasn't as bad as you thought it was.
Yeah, it made it seem, extremely threatening, mortally dangerous. But
is that because of the fear of the unknown?
That was definitely a huge factor.
Yeah.
The pain, the claustrophobic, the dimly lit.
Mm-hmm.
cramped interior, all of those things, feeling trapped, and perhaps, you know, the weakness I was feeling. I'm trying to escape and trying to fight, and my body's just not responding, you know, to feel the urge to be quick, and you can't quite muster the ability to move or move quickly.
Sounds like a bad dream. Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of other factors that took me a long time to realize that if they had meant harm or meant to cause me pain or anything like that, it would have been much different.
Mm-hmm.
That I was returned at all, you know, and to a place where I could get help weighed very heavily on my side that there had to be some sort of, you know, concern for my welfare.
They must have, because as you mentioned, and of course it's in the film, the book, you were dropped. Was it 8 feet or so? You were lifted and you were dropped?
Well, you know, I don't know, because I was unconscious during that period.
Oh, that's right. It was the other crew that said that they saw you drop or hit the ground.
Yeah, they said it was thrown through the air. That was probably an accident.
And then later you thought that, hey, that they may have brought you into the craft to heal you.
Yeah, to revive me, you know. And it's possible, you know, the violence of that blast of energy throwing me through the air, and I'm, you know, they described my body hitting the ground like a dead man. And, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, John said, like a sack of meat, like a sack of bones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they immediately were screaming at each other. They said that he's dead, because it was that violent. So, you know, if they had, you know, just grabbed my body up and took off, I'd have probably been dead. You know, the nearest hospital was over an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably a good thing that they were frightened away long enough for me to be taken aboard and revived.
Well, that's a real experience of growth there. Wow. Because, you know, we've done some interviews with my dear friend David Jacobs, and he has a book out now that we're sending a copy to you. I don't necessarily believe it all, but it's called Walking Among Us, The Alien Plan to Control Humanity. Have you heard about it yet?
I've heard of his, you know, he's a good friend, but I just do not agree with his take on these things, you know, and it's kind of a self-fulfilling circumstance when he's any description of alien-human interaction that varies from this very limited scenario is really just a screen memory. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, you could just as easily claim that the terrifying part's a screen memory, you know. I mean, if you go to try to accept this part and reject that part on the basis of what? You know?
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for your perspective on that, because I think it's important. And if you'd rather us not send you this book, we'll send you a different one.
Oh, I'd like to look at it. You know, I'm open-minded. But,
okay.
You know, there's so many circumstances pointing in the direction of benevolence rather than malevolence.
That's correct. Oh, we got to take a final break here. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with our guests, Travis Walton and Jennifer Stein. I've got another question I want to ask her before everything closes down here on 21st Century Radio. And we're about ready to give away a free copy of this DVD, so stay tuned. Some of my favoritest music in the world. Yes, I was 3 years old listening to this. I remember it. How would you like to win a free free DVD of that we're talking about here? It's called Travis, The True Story of Travis Walton by, actually go to this website, www.onwings, I'll spell that, O-N-W-I-N-G-E-S. Productions.com by filmmaker Jennifer W. Stein. If you know the answer to this hour's trivia question, you're going to win it. This is how you do it. Do you know who our first hour guest was the last time that I hosted 21st Century Radio? Just tell us the name of our first hour guest the last time I was doing my job here at 21st Century Radio. You're going to be the winner, but you need to qualify. And there are many ways to do this. Probably the best way is just send me a check for $500, and you qualify right away, and you can win it. Or, needless to say, you can cheat, and you know how to cheat, by going up to the website and check it out. But you can also find out by this. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
This is Dr. John Mack, author of Passport to the Cosmos, Human Transformation and Alien Encounters. You are listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Thank you, Dr. John. Sure do miss you, John. But I know you're doing you're a lot happier now than you probably ever have been for some time. Our guests are Jennifer Stein, the executive producer and director of Travis, a 90-minute film documentary recounting the famous 1975 UFO abduction of Travis Walton. Of course, Travis Walton is also here. You know, I don't believe we have these kinds of experiences by accident, but I'm biased. I'm very biased. I believe that there's a reason and there's a purpose to everything in life. I'm going to start with you, Jennifer.
Okay.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Jennifer, what do you think about that statement? It sounds like a pretty corny statement, but that's what I believe. I believe that there's a reason and purpose in everything that happens to us in life. And how do you feel about that?
Well, I don't know. You know, we live with such a blinded perspective on the nature of the larger universe in our lifetimes. So it's very, very tricky to know if everything we do has a purpose. I'd like to think it does, and I try to live my life in a purposeful way. And, of course, at the end of my life, I'm going to want to be able to look back and say, well, I did some important things, and they had a purpose. I think what we do have, Bob, is we have the opportunity to take events that happened to us and you know, shift them. We can shift our perspectives on them. We can shift our memories on them. And we can shift how other people think about them. That's certainly something Travis has done through this film and through his life, through writing his book and through dealing with really what happened to him. And so did the other men in this crew. And I'm hoping that when people see this film, it brings some closure and some healing and some purposefulness, at least to what happened to them. And it helps shift people in their thinking about the whole UFO topic in general. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but that's what I'll give it for tonight.
Well, you know, I know that there are researchers such as Bud Hopkins and John Mack and scores of others, they felt that there was some reason in why they were involved or how they got involved. And, of course, many of it was basically they were quite concerned by those who were abductees and having these experiences and losing control of their lives. And the way the media treated them certainly did not make it easier for them to regain control of their lives. So it was one of the reasons why I was so proud of Bud Hopkins and John sticking their necks out there, because they didn't make very much money on this. That's probably one of the things that the earmarks for most of the people that get involved with serious research. It's not the making of the money. It's not the becoming a star. It is resolving certain information, or especially in regards to the unknown, that there is life in the rest of the universe, and we're not alone. We never have been. That's my bias in this particular area. What do you think, Walt? I called him all.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll take the last part first. You know, the idea that, you know, when people who, and really it comes down to what people want to believe. Those who don't want to believe, no amount of evidence will ever be enough for them. For those who have experienced it, no more proof is necessary. But the people who don't want to believe it always go to that money thing. Oh, you must be getting rich doing that. Nobody, not Jennifer with this film, no, none of the investigators, nobody could possibly be motivated by the money that's in this field, because that's not there. You know, it's a spice, it's a labor of love, and it's a dedication to an idea, mm-hmm. Or a collection of ideas. And, you know, what you were saying about you think that, you know, you're in control of your life, that's a profound question. And like you said, I've become quite the philosopher. You know, in my book, even the 2010 edition, I quote Aristotle saying, you know, that we shouldn't, you know, I was talking about all the coincidences that had happened, and I said we shouldn't attach too much significance to coincidence, because as Aristotle said, it's inevitable that the unusual will sometimes occur. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, these things happen. That just even when flying up in spectacular ways, the chance would suggest that eventually that's going to happen anyway. But you know, I've really had some things come into my life in the last 6 years that really have pushed me in the other direction.
Tell us about
big on the idea of free agency. But you know, it really seems like the universe delivers circumstances and events at times that are just defy coincidence. Too many, a long series of incidences for it to just be a random accident.
Can you give us some examples in your life?
Well, you know, a lot of them are personal, you know, but, you know, I listed some of the coincidences that were just in connection with the connection between the various people, the actors, you know, and how these things just kind of, you know, it's just kind of curious, you know, mm-hmm. that one of the extras was a cousin and, you know, that I'd never met. And, you know, like one of the documentaries that had been done on my case was narrated by James Earl Jones.
Whoa, boy.
Played across from Arnold Schwarzenegger, who played across from Robert Patrick, who was played Mike Rogers in Fire in the Sky. So lots of coincidences about, you know, mm-hmm. you know, people, places, and things.
What do you think the purpose was with you in this particular experience?
Well, I've really resisted that it was me being their plan. Now, Steve and Alan, you know, really go in. Now I think Kenny's leaning that way, that they were laying for us, that they were waiting for us, that they knew we would be coming there. Hmm. And, you know, there's several outs that we could have left the contract, so they would have had to been right on top of things or they observed that we were leaving by way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like I said, I've resisted the idea. And you know, when I jumped out of the truck and headed towards there, Alan was saying that it looked to him I was being drawn towards it. He said this summer in an interview, and Steve has said this, you know, that he thought was under some outside control. But I've always said, hey, wait a minute. It felt to me like it was my own brazen impulse. But
yeah, because you wanted to get as close to it as possible. Am I wrong?
Yeah, to get a closer look. I was curious. I thought it would take off. You know, all those ideas were in my head. But they argued, well, if they have mind control, they can make it your idea, too.
Yeah, I guess they could. But there have been many experiences in which UFOs took off immediately when someone came towards them in the past. Yeah. So you had every reason to believe that that's quite possible for them to get up and go. Because from what I understand, it could be ships like that could have some type of radiation that might not be helpful to anybody.
Yeah, and so, you know, for our own good, they're going to try to keep their distance. But, you know, part of my thought about that taking off is, you know, when we're driving woods, we'll spot, you know, the wild horses or wild animals, you know, and you yell, hey, look, look, look. And, you know, by the time the crew looks, you know, it's deered. So, you know, it's very common to see something and, you know, if you don't look, you're going to miss it.
Yeah, yeah. What's next for you, Travis? Where are you going to do next?
My next trip is to Hong Kong. I've never been there, but I'm...
Hong Kong. Wow.
On December 5th.
Are you married?
No.
No? So you're free to go travel where you need to go?
Yeah.
Without any worries and concerns about that. So you're going to be going to Hong Kong, and you're going to continue this particular work. Is there anything that you really want to leave with our audience tonight in regards to this work?
Well, you know, I think it's very important. My main goal is to make people realize that these things, this is a real phenomenon. At the same time, they have to realize that it's not all true. There are misidentified ordinary objects, and the people who are working in this field recognize that.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. People need shape. You know, in my book, I lead with condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
And with
so
that,
my main plea is take a look at the evidence.
Good going. And with that, we got to go. Thank you, Travis and Jennifer, for joining us. On the web, TravisWaltonTheMovie.com. Travis's website is www.travis-walton.com.
With stimulating talk and breaking news on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Rich Johnson. Busy night.